so right now we're in discussing the verdict in the Knorr trial. Judge's instructions detailed what Knorr jurors needed before finding guilt. Each charge had specific elements for jurors to weigh in the Mohamed Knorr murder trial. Our lawyer extraordinaire, Jeff O'Brien, joins us. Jeff, you mentioned it a moment ago, and I'd like to get into this, if possible, on the third degree, because I know it's mentioned by a couple of different attorneys in the stories, but for that third degree murder conviction, and you're right, it was funny when I found out that it was third degree murder, I went, oh, that's different. I don't think I've heard that before. But the Knorr caused Damon's death, and then I do that thing with my fingers, by perpetuating an act eminently dangerous to others and evincing a depraved mind. Can you get into that? What does that mean?
Well, you know, I've looked at this a little bit, and again, this is a rare statute to be charged under, but you're dealing with a situation. It's a tricky issue. What's the difference between a depraved mind and you know just causing unreasonable risk? I look at it a little bit. You know, on the civil side of the law, where we use a lot of negligence versus gross negligence. You know, it's doing things. I think depraved mind is taking actions that. It's almost like you know someone is going to get hurt or worse by doing it, and you do it anyways. And I think I heard some stories about what the circumstances of this shooting. Did he did he shoot across his partner? Did he shoot through the car? There must have been evidence that was presented to the jury that convinced them that there was something more than just creating unreasonable risk.
Right, and I guess it's a difficult one because I think we often, when you hear the word depraved, and depraved mind, you make this jump in your mind to a particular mindset of an individual, and you kind of go, wow, I mean, was he depraved? But the more sort of specific definition of that term would basically be if you've got your weapon out. And you're more than willing to use it in a circumstance where it may not be necessary, then that could be operating under a depraved mind. Like, I know if this person comes at me, I can probably punch him and get him out of the way, but I got a gun, so I'm just going to go ahead and shoot him in the face.
Yeah, and I think the presence of his partner there might be the key to this charge, because the situations of what I've read, some of the legal experts that talk about this third degree murder statute, the examples they use is driving your car into a crowd of people when you're drunk or on drugs, it seems to be the element has to be there has to be more than one person present. So here, where you've got the partner there, it's you're going to hurt somebody. There was a chance he could have shot his own partner the way that the story's played out in terms of what he had done.
We've got
so
this.
I think that's part of it. I think part of the fact that there was two people there and he's just firing the gun.
Yeah.
I think is what led to the third degree murder charge versus just the second degree manslaughter charge.
We've got an article here from the Star Tribune that details some of the judge's instructions, and the line that really jumped out to me when it came to the third degree murder conviction, it just showed that Knorr's actions were. It did not need to be proven that Knorr's actions were specifically directed at the particular person whose death occurred, but that he knew his actions demonstrated a heedless disregard and it could kill someone.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I think the fact that he put he was putting his own partner in jeopardy with his actions, and I think that's what led Mike Freeman to include that charge.
Yeah, I think the fact that he fired across his partner, I think you're absolutely right. I think that carried a pretty major significance when it came to this particular conviction.
Yep, and now we'll see. We'll have to see what the criminal trial concluded. Or will it be the sentencing yet? I think he gets sentenced on June 7th is the date that I've read. And now we get to find out at some point. We'll probably see a settlement between the city of Minneapolis or some sort of lawsuit with Justine Diamond's family and the city of Minneapolis for as well. And I think I hope that this makes communities think twice before they start playing politics and social engineering with their law enforcement agencies, because there was evidence that early on that's what the case was here. This guy was fast-tracked to be able to, everybody could go out and take photo ops with him to show that they had a member of the Somali community in law enforcement.
Can you and do you know what sort of parameters these convictions set when it comes to sentencing? Are there any minimums that you're aware of? What kind of leeway does the judge have?
That's a good question. The third degree murder charge, per the statute, it's up to 25 years in prison, and the second degree manslaughter charge is up to 10 years. So the 10 years max on the second degree manslaughter, 25 years max on third degree murder.
Are those additional, or are those like
can they run concurrently?
Yeah, do they run concurrently, or are they
stacked on top of one another?
I think they can run concurrently. I don't think you tack them. The 10 and then the 25. I think that they would run concurrently.
And I believe this is an appealable ruling. I would expect Noor's team to file an appeal.
Yeah, very likely. It is appealable. I would expect that they would, and maybe they only appeal the third degree murder charge. I don't know. I would expect an appeal. Yes.
Lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien, really appreciate your expertise and your time this morning. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
Good chatting with you.